short reading, the most difficult, this harmonious reading. What I neglect and most important is the least theological bias, especially in the Old Testament. Because a lot of the corrections and variants have to do with theological, have a theological base of their origin. Particularly, like the emendations of the Pope and the 18 emendations, where they change, God's Abraham standing in front of God instead of God standing in front of Abraham, and things like that. So there's quite a few that can be explained on that basis. So it's a little more important than the New Testament, where you have more scribal problems in that area, but it varies. But there are consistent errors in the Old Testament versus theology. Anything that has to do with nations from two opposite parts. I was going to add that in. Just a principle in Old Testament text of criticism and theological bias, at least theological bias. Okay, are there any questions about the assignment? Not too for a week, but it has to be done something yes, that and the linear that I gave with it, the A, just to help the vocabulary. All I want on there is to list information, as much information as you can without using commentaries as the last or just try and get it from VHS. Do the best you can with that and using the key that I showed you and using the information in the back of VHS. Also, I ask that you divide it with regards to whether the information is in the critical apparatus and the information is in the Torah. And the Torah is going to be the most difficult.
Divide
it up. So the first thing you look at would be the critical apparatus. You can put it in any order, but if you're checking for a variant, that would be the first place you'd look. And then if you wanted to edit the verse out, and if you have comments in the margin, that would be the next place in order of importance where you go. So if you want to divide it that way, so you see the different types of information you're given in each one. And rather than go through, today I was going to go through a little bit of the story, but I want to wait and see let you struggle through a little bit first. And then we'll go back through it. I think it'll mean we'll go back through it after you try it a little bit. So, I'm not going to make a big heavy grade out of trying to come out of the Torah. Not that any comments, I don't think I'm not going to. But I did give an extra credit of assignment. Which, if you can wait through all of the sort of comments there, you're doing very well. And also, Isaiah 7:11, and I'll tell you here the difference has to do with kindness. I mentioned Daniel 12:4 and 5. You might put those two together in your notes as an example if you're explaining to somebody. But Isaiah 7:11, Daniel 12:4, that was where I mentioned where the point of one way is running to or fro, and the other way is opposite. And also, there's another interesting one in Deuteronomy 30. So, if you run into it, you really get stuck. Call me up to grab me a class or something. I particularly picked one that didn't have much in the Torah, and gave the other one a Genesis connection. But we'll go through the Genesis 1 class next week. And that's on the other handout here. I mean, there's two of them, Isaiah 53 and Genesis 1. It's got a green thin linear. So both of these, or any of these that you do, use, if there's a variant, use green thin linear and write out the translation. You don't have to put it in good English, just in green gives it, so long as you understand it. If you've got the translation right in the column, you can just use that translation. But then, using the vocabulary, using the interlinear as a guide, there's a variant restated how it would be translated with the variant. VHS, it gives the V reading, the capital V, and sometimes different numbers after. Those are variants that are in the Masoretic manuscripts themselves. They're important variants. They're not in the manuscript that has come to be the accepted text of the Masoretic financial text, but they're in other Masoretic manuscripts. That's why they. Letters after the various symbols after refer to a particular Masoretic text. They, in my mind, have a little more weight than the version considering the evidence that line, especially if that lined up with the version. Laid out, and we're doing a real detailed study on it, it would help you pinpoint where different things are. practical analysis, or the structural analysis really could go before electrical analysis. I think I had to write it in. Yes, I will. Next section of electrical analysis, title that, I think at least some information out of it would be reviewed, but I think there's some information that would be a little more practical that you can use right away. So I'm going to jump into that. This could be included under grammatical analysis, but broken down because it's really such a broad category. The whole topic is in books or whatever, grammar, the grammatical analysis. But for a non-language student, it's the next logical step after you decide that there's an invariant. See the words that you're looking at, where you got that you're looking at. The goal in verse analysis is to identify and solve any lexical problems that have a bearing on the exegesis of the verse in question. The goal then in verse analysis is to identify and solve any lexical problems that have a bearing on the exegesis of the verse in question. Now this involves three steps. First would be to find and identify the word or words. The second would be discovering the meaning of the word or words in the word today. And the third would be an evaluation of the first two steps in light of the verse in question, and in the overall paper, you'd be solving any problems that you could at this point. Now, there may be no problems if you remember, like what Greg was doing in Ezekiel there, where you've got a word that only occurs once in the entire Old Testament, and your whole theology, whether there's a sixth of the army left, or whether it's translating, translated to lead that whole army on, the whole army is destroyed, turns on what you do with that word. And so it becomes pretty important. Let's say, I'm going to take you the step at a time. The first step then would be finding and identifying the word. And there's four ways that I've laid out here to do this. You may have another way. I'm going to give these four, and you're probably using number one or more of them. I'm sure you are. Okay, first would be to locate the word in the interlinear, and then use the analytical lexicon. Fisherman's Concordance, the either Greek or Hebrew, looking up the English index in the back, and looking the word up that's used in the King James, comparing the Greek or Hebrew translation by that English word. In other words, you look up your options that you have in Greek or Hebrew, and it gives you the Hebrew word that's translated by those terms in the King James, and it'll give you the dictionary lexical form opposite, if it happens to translate that way in the King James. It usually is, but sometimes you can't find it that way. That's number two. Number three would be using Strong's numbers and then turning to the back of the lexicon, the Greek or Hebrew lexicon. And giving definitions and electrical form as well. Often the advantage to that is if there's so many reference words in another key that you're on. You don't pull out on the analytical lexicon, I think I mentioned this before. This blue one, there's a later edition than the red one. There's a new Zondervan that had corrected the mistakes of the old one, a few mistakes. Bader's Greek lexicon says new. All I want to say new is key to Strong, but it got Strong's number in the columns, which go along. So you don't need to know the Greek at all, you need Strong's number to look up the Strong's number in the equation right off the definition of the Strong. Busy person, doesn't want the exercise of having to memorize the Hebrew or Greek alphabet and go through all the process of it. If you just got thrown in and you want to find it, that doesn't do it the other way. It doesn't teach you how to do the other way, but it is the quickest by far.
They aren't necessarily exact words.
No, because they aren't always listed.
Sometimes you need to know the alphabet, you know.
Yeah, you get into problems like that. Generally they are, but you do get into, for example, you'll never find the verb to be. You can go and put it in, because it's association with the divine names, it's not in the word at all. And that's why it's very hard to find it. We have, in addition to these, I should just mention that. I'm making a handout that evaluates all the different ones and shows their strengths and weaknesses. Molten Gidden is pure Greek. Okay, here. The English one, just your entry is in Greek, and then your words that follow it in the sentence are in English. But in this, it's all Greek, so it gives you the whole Greek phrase. You don't need to know Greek, but it sure helps. But you could use an interlinear to find it this way. But this has, once you learn to use it, has a lot of advantages over the English. It has some variants of the English based on the sentence perspective. And this gives you phrases in the Greek. It also gives you a lot of times the reference to the Hebrew in the Old Testament. That's the four. The advantage of the second, third, and fourth is you have to use the King James Version. Only this is it. And then your the fourth would be, the fourth would be using notes. Look up all the words that are translated, find out which word it is. And it gives you the exact using strong, using Englishman's index, and using the interlinear, the analytic list. It's really just a matter of preference to which you like. The advantage of strong for non-language students, somebody who's busy, can get you almost all the reference words without having to know the language. Okay. And identifying the form, that would be finding. Identifying the form which we have some terminology I want to introduce, I'm not sure what I'm doing this here, but there will not be it. The form of word morphology. Anytime in theology, it's a study of. So it's a study of morphemes. And a morpheme is the smallest unit of language that has meaning. So that would include suffixes and prefixes as well as words. But you'll see that terminology is in place and wonder what's going on, but all it means is that the form, the particular form of the word, when you're doing a word study or something, identify the form. Another word we'd say, another the analytical Greek or Hebrew lexicon. Well, I'm not going to give a technical definition. It's just identifying a particular form of the word in question. If you parse a verb, I'm going to give you in Greek, because it's the most complicated. You should listen to this to review the abbreviations that are used in the analytical lexicon. If you've got your lexicon. She's brought it today. We probably won't need them tomorrow. But I think we've got enough here where we can look on. You guys got any over there? Here, I've got a few here. There's only five things you have to know, really, as far as abbreviations go for the part of the word. Okay, if the English begins with two, feel, followed by an English verb, then it's a verb. And the verb form is always finding. It'll say ID or something like this. And that means you just keep going back up the line to the next form you come to. And it gives you the verb form, first person singular, active voice, indicative mood, present tense. First person singular, active voice, indicative mood, present tense. For verbs. The word to plus an English verb. And if you go out, and you can pick an example where you see ID, or if the verb is just opposite, then you've got the form right there. If you've got ID, and you go back up to the form. Okay. If there's an article, that's the form that you looked up. but then you go the same way, you go ID, if that's in the column, then you go back to the original form, and the original form that I'm going to give, the dictionary form, would be the first person singular active voice. Okay. It identifies, in other words, if you're the first, what you get after the verb would be what that particular verb is. Form that particular be first, second, third person. And any number of, combinations of voices and moods, tenses. But then you follow it out to the column, and if it doesn't give the verb right there, if it says ID, then you just go up. That means that all of those were ID. It means that it's form of the same verb, so you get back to the first form, which is the dictionary form, which is first person singular active voice. So all that does is identify the dictionary form when you get back to there. But what you need would be what's right after the word. Now, if it, whether it's first, second, or third person, if it says heiress one or heiress two, which means AOR, you can ignore the one or two unless you know Greek, and even then it's not going to make that much difference. I mean, as far as interpreting the heiress book. Okay, let's try. I just thought everybody already had this. Try, let's see what you've got on page 128. I think we've got different positions. You should have. This in the upper left hand corner. Everybody got that on page 128? Oh, good. Okay. Now, the first term, the first let's go down to one of the third person. Okay, you've got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, or let's say the fourth verb down. These are verbs because you've got a person, you've got the, whether it's plural or singular, you've got the tense, AOR, which stands for aorist, one, first aorist, subjunctive, mood, active, tense. And then out in the right-hand column it says ID. That tells you to go up the column to the first word on the column, which is the dictionary form, which is the first person singular, active voice, indicative, mood, present tense. Okay, now there's a reason for finding that. I'm going to get to that in a minute, because once you've got that, you can do a cognate word study, which may be valuable and may not, but you know how to do it. But that gives you the dictionary form right there. So, okay, let's take another one. Let's go down 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. It says first person plural, and the I-N-P-E-R-F is imperfect and passive. Well, these definitions, these abbreviations, I think they give a list in the abbreviation. Okay, after the table of contents, the page says abbreviation. It's in that, it's in the other edition. It's a preface and the contents, there's no page number. Then it gives abbreviation. Everybody got that? give you the abbreviations for what these mean. But if you had a, if you were going to pursue it further, grammar, you know, you wouldn't confuse it with anything else. If you looked up AOR, all of them are just the first two or three letters of whatever that, you know, whatever the rest of the word is. So AOR, IMP, if you were setting out imperfect or the aorist, and Damon Manny say you couldn't mistake it for something else because the table contents in the aorist. But if there's any confusion, then I guess this does. I didn't see this before, but that's the abbreviation. Pardon? No, I was thinking of the Hebrew, but the Greek here. The Hebrew, maybe I just go ahead and spend a little more time with that because it's a little more complicated. I figured I could go through this real fast. Hebrew gets a little bit more complicated. Okay, so we were down to 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. First person plural, imperfect passive. Okay. It says ID, and you go up and find out krino. There's the verb that it's from. Okay, now, these are for verbs. Let's take a, next page. Aorist 1 or 2. Okay, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11. It says AOR 2. Don't worry about that. It's a different ending. They classify them as Aorist 1 or Aorist 2. And it would be too complicated to get into in here. And there's a lot of speculation. Most people don't feel it means any different than me. Some people do, like the concordant polishing people do. Okay, go down. That's where you have to get the English definition. Okay. Now here we've got. Look down at the bottom of the page on the left hand. Okay, it says to stretch out, to lay hands on anyone. Okay, that's in the English definition now. And all this word, this gives you here, back to the first word again on the page, in the right hand column there. Acrizo. You'd have to be look that up then, which would be preceding page, last entry, and it goes to root up or eradicate. So you know it's a verb. That tells you it's a verb. Even if you didn't know anything else, if you didn't know how to interpret any of this rest of it, you just look up found the dictionary form, and then look up the dictionary form. And that'll give you whether, you know, that'll tell you whether it's a verb or not. Number two, okay. That's where two plus the English came from. You have to get the English definition. Now you could take that. So you could take that form right there and then go to a lexicon and do a study on a lexicon. That would give you the same information. It'll give you whether it's a verb or noun. Give you more of a definition than you get right here. It's just give you a real brief definition. And the little symbols there with the back on the preceding page, you know, where we the root up. It tells you number 20, table K. You don't need to worry about that. Because that's just a particular conjugation that belongs to what you're doing. Thank you. this is from another family, this would give you, let's take one from the patient. Page 101. If you trace down, you've got all of these DKI in the right hand column, all the way over in the right hand column, going down to the DKIs, which is look that up. This word here. In other words, if you looked up, let's say, has everyone found this? Okay, let's say what we were looking up though was one of the other words, and we went, you know, gives you ibid or whatever. The Latin means ibid, same as in English. And you got the dicyls. Okay, look up dicyls, and which would be down the line away here, and then after it, it gives you A-I-A and A-I-O-N. What does that tell you? Everybody find it? Okay. Let's see. 1, 2, okay, that tells you what? You've got two endings, you've got no article, and that's it. Okay, and in the right hand column of that entry there, it gives DI DICA. That's not an N. Okay, now if you looked up that, which is on the next page, you get to the patriarch of the whole family tree. And this is where you get the definition, right? Or justice, judicial punishment, vengeance. And then it gives you cognates. Cognates are words in the same family, like brothers and sisters and cousins and nephews. In other words, it's words that are derived, they believe they're derived from the same root. And there's a lot of speculation involved. Now, when you go, they say cognate languages, it's a similar language like Arabic and Hebrew. When you do the cognate language or Ethiopic, they'll say, and like a word doesn't exist, they can't find out what it means in Hebrew. They'll study the similar root structure in a cognate language to see if they can interpret the word. And that's what you get a lot of definitions that way in the Old Testament. That's the only thing that they had to go by. But the importance here is it gives you the family, it gives you the root from which. Now this turned out to be what form is it here? Incidentally, you've got this following. So what does that tell you? What it gave you here first was the, this is going to complicate this, but it gives you the genitive case. It gives you, you don't have to worry about that. But if you look for one of these three following, a lot of times it'll give you another set of letters first, okay? It'll give you that. Sometimes it'll give you, the reason it gives you that is if there's any complications as to what the form would be, it gives you the, instead of just giving you the nominative, it gives you the genitive form as well. But then it'll give you the article. So these are the articles here. If you see the article someplace, either right after or the next one after, you know it's a noun. Now, you can find that out just by looking in the column here, because it doesn't say to, it just says right or justice. Judicial punishment or vengeance here. It doesn't say anything. It doesn't say to something plus an English verb. Okay? And this, so this gives you the root from where we were at back over on the other page originally with Dickhouse. Okay, and it gives you, by successively looking up the ones that it refers you to, the root, the dictionary form, it leads you back to what the root is. Okay. There's one other thing. These are Greek. But in Greek capital letters, it gives you the alphabet on every page. It's not in a concordance. It gives you the roots of all the words in the New Testament. At least what they think here. It's speculation. If you want to, do a word study on a particular word, and you want to see what family it's from, like it's supposed to be here. It's in capital letters, but it gives you the capital letter alphabet right on each page. This is a concordance. Put out by a concordant publisher called the Greek Element. Okay, we gotta get there. Okay, we got to an adjective, a noun, and a verb. If it's followed, if after the word it just says PRO, it's a pronoun. Always nominative, masculine, singular. Now, if it's an adverb, it just says ADV after it. Now, if it's not in any one of these categories, it says INF or PART, or you see something strange like that, it has something to do with a verb. You don't have to worry. Participle or infinitive. But you should have already identified it as a verb by the, you know, by tracing down to it as two plus the English. Okay. If you remember those five things though, you can find it whether you know what you're looking at or not. If you can find the definition regardless of what it says after, if you trace down the root and get back to the root and it gives you definition to something, you know it's a verb. If it's got the article either right after it or next to the entry right after it, then it's a noun. And if it has more than one ending that's not an article, like we had here, that's an adjective. There's different forms. These aren't the only different things. This is a particular adjective form. And if it says PRO or ADV after it, then it's a pronoun or an adverb. Now you don't have all this in Hebrew, you have different systems. Simpler but more complicated. I assume that most of you have this Greek orientation, but if you don't, you need to brush up on it. You'll get together individually. Should be able to do it. Is there any questions? We can take them real quick. Okay. Okay, the reason for cognates, and I mentioned cognates, okay? Because sometimes you may not know the meaning of the word itself may be unclear, but you can get a feel for it by knowing all the rest of the words in the family. And if you're doing a particular word study on it where you want to, it's a vague word, but if you can get a hold of the root idea, sometimes it's really helpful. And there's other advantages too for doing it. That's the main one. Okay. That's number one. Step number two, we'll talk about the meaning of the sentence we're evaluating the book. Now, just spend some time with your analytical lexicon if you're not clear. If you can't figure that out, I tried to go over it just to simplify those five areas. I wasn't trying to present my first time through. I figured all of these kind of confusing a little bit. But if it's not real clear, then get together and we'll spend some time going over it. I'm doing the same with the Hebrew, but it's a little harder. Yeah, you don't need to bring the Greek lexicon. I'll go over the Hebrew a little bit more.